Welcome to the Angle Podcast. If you're new around here, this is where we explore the creative industry that is gaming, XR, and VR. We also take deep dives into tech startups and digital governance. As always, I'm riding with my homie, the Silver Fox of the show, Scotty Yo.
How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
We have an innovator in the building.
We do.
This man is the founder and CEO of Intech. The company is revolutionizing renewable energy using Internet of Things and a number of innovative strategies. Mr. Ndwamato Manyanya, how are you doing, sir?
I am well. Thanks for that introduction.
I think I was supposed to introduce him proper. Msanda.
Enda.
Kakame. Dindindi.
Now that's even better. You just topped it off.
There you go. Brief intro.
Yeah, tell us about yourself.
Yeah. Okay, I am Welcome Ndwamato Manyanya, and only if I'd 1 rand for every time someone said welcome, welcome.
Damn.
I would be a billionaire, I think. But I'm a 3-time founder with 1 failure, 3 successes. Yeah. And INTech is then the latest baby, which stands for I and Technology. So with INTech, it's something special, but me on a more personal scale, I am a 25-year-old, 26-year-old founder who's done a couple of trade shows internationally, locally, tried to get government to encourage and build a better ecosystem, built a jet engine in grade 10 out of cans for a science project. I think that always puts a smile on people's faces when I say that. Studied at UP, received a golden key. And then during my second degree, my father unfortunately passed away. So then I dropped out to run the family business and take care of my 7 other siblings.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
You're the firstborn?
No. Actually, I'm the last born in terms of boys.
How?
Yeah, there's a lot of girls in my family.
Ah.
5 to be specific, and 2 boys.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear your father passed.
No, it's okay. I think it was a very painful moment, but one thing you always used to tell me is, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And during that very painful moment, it passed. And great things came, which passed too. So, like life, you always evolve. And the good and bad, you allow it to help you grow.
Interesting.
Absolutely. So, I've got a bit of a soft spot for energy tech. I like the space. One, because it's a really interesting problem. But also, the solutions are really often very clever, very innovative. And they kind of, in retrospect, they're often, sometimes obvious. Like, it's always, oh, yeah, of course we could have done that, you know, that would have solved things. But, of course, that kind of technology is often rife with, there's lots of politics there, lots of embedded businesses there that don't want to necessarily get rid of, say, for example, the oil, profits. Mm. But, I mean, my general feeling is that we could actually run the planet for free, for the most part.
You really could.
I'm very keen to hear about your latest endeavor.
No, thank you. And you actually introduced it perfectly, saying it's things that exist, very easy. And the moment you hear, you're like, oh, it's a dumb moment, you know? Mm. So with INTech, how we started is, we want always the most wealthiest people on the block. And we lived in a very nice suburb, you know? And being a lot of us, and my mom was a housewife, as well as she sold chips outside of my local school. And my dad was the one who was in trucking working. So at some times when it used to rain, my brother and siblings and I would build paper boats and place them on the road after it rained and watch them flow downstream, you know. And at the time, it was just a game. But as I grew older after the business, I thought back to that moment and I'm like, there's actually something there that we missed out, which was kinetic energy.
Yeah.
And we looked at that people drive, we walk, we exercise, we use water, and energy exists in all these spaces, but we do nothing about it. So that's why we formed INTech. We started off with a tile, actually.
A tile?
Yes. That you step on it and harnesses your pressure to generate electricity.
Nice.
And then, yeah, from there we saw the vertical is big. We created then 4 patents. One with gym equipment that converts lost calories into electricity. A tile that I mentioned that when you step on it, generates electricity.
Right.
A road device, when cars drive over it, generates electricity. And a conduit turbine that's placed in water. So in water, they try and reduce pressure so it mustn't blow the taps off our things. And then we say, don't use a pressure-reducing valve. Use a turbine to not reduce pressure only, but also generate electricity that they need to in supplying the water. So that was basically how IronTech was started.
Damn. So all of those are interconnected to
yes.
produce, to give one output?
Yes, energy as well as data.
How's the pickup been?
It has been very difficult at first, but right now it's picking up steam. At first, we had to bootstrap, so we had to self-fund the business. People didn't believe it was possible until you had to build a first product for them to see it's actually possible. And then we've gotten traction in the UK, in the UAE, in China, where our business developer now is based. We are manufacturing in China now. We're bringing back manufacturing back home because it creates jobs. We've done the US. We should be doing the G20 this year, trying to build more traction. And now we're going into market, full-scale market, where we have support from Macro Africa. So MassMart Africa will allow us to sell our products in all macros across Africa and game. We're in talks with Takealot, Decathlon, as well as some government entities like your Rand Waters, your Umgeni Waters, which need pressure-reducing valves, which use pressure-reducing valves, and they need energy.
So what would be the easiest application of the solution, say, in my house, how would this apply?
So the easiest entry in the B2C market, the business to customer market, is via the gym equipment.
Okay.
So many people are health conscious, and we're going to a trend of health consciousness. But it's ridiculous that you need to pay an electricity bill to use a treadmill to exercise or a bicycle. So, and you're losing energy in the whole point.
Yeah.
So we do for customers, we allow them to then generate energy using their treadmills, using their bicycles for power that they can use later on in the house, whether it's to watch TV, whether it's to charge your laptop. The reward that you get that I exercise in the morning and have a full laptop charged based on the energy I generated. So it gives them that benefit, as well as we benefit them with green coins.
Yeah.
So you'll earn a green coin that you can then exchange later on for a monetary value. So we give you electricity, good health, as well as we pay you to exercise.
Interesting. I'm going to ask you about the green points in a bit. But looking like an obvious example, your gym equipment. Say, for example, if you could just maybe explain the hardware a little bit better. Say, for example, you're in a Virgin gym. The treadmills that they have there, for example, do they have to swap the whole treadmill? Is it some sort of just meter that you put on? How does it work
though? Okay, so maybe I'll give you some insights on some IP. Right, so how it works is...
We're not still the IP.
This is patented technology.
Yes.
Amen.
So what we're trying to do with it, we're trying to bring a mix of fusion energy, right? Where in the permagnet motors, we add now... I'll call it X, which is on news right now, which is booming, and the UK is trying to also integrate in X, that allows you to harness more energy in a high efficiency rate. So we will put in our motors in the existing equipment, or we manufacture our own equipment. And then from there, you no longer need the cord to generate, to connect it to then the wall. But then in a setting like Virgin Active, we interlink all equipments to send power to the grid or an inverter, which will then go to the Virgin Active facility. But at home, we give you what we call a mini fit buddy, which is your portable power bank that after you exercise, you can charge in a power bank, and you can carry that power bank wherever you want to go. That's your energy.
So you'd have to replace some mechanics within the treadmill?
Just the motor.
Just the motor?
Just the motor.
And then that's it?
That's it.
Whew, that must be costly. If you were given like 20 gyms across the city, and you have to change a motor within each treadmill, I bet that would cost a bit.
It should, theoretically,
but
practically, no. When we're looking at the energy bills that the gym facilities are using, embedding that motor allows them to save 50% of energy costs within the first 3 months of it, with your peak and your off-peak. So the initial cost might be high to do the integration, but after that, you save a lot of money and the planet.
So the gym fits the bill, for example.
Exactly.
The gym would fit the bill, and you would offset. You would explain to them, okay, here's the bill for this technology, but it'd get offset against your energy costs, or there's other ways they can maybe benefit their customers and using this tech.
So they get savings in energy costs as well as tax rebates for clean energy, for using a clean energy to run their facilities. So, yeah, it does that.
Okay. Interesting. Now, sorry to take you back, but back to, you said you are manufacturing in China.
Yes.
Is there an assembly line in China for some of the components and the technologies that you're building? Are you assembling there as well?
No, we bring assembly back home.
Well, your assembly line is here?
Yes, and then our manufacturing is there. They have CNC laser cutters at affordable prices. So there's technology that at a bootstrap level we could not afford to bring home. So we then got rentals, guys who rent out the equipment to us in China at affordable cost, and then we'd bring it back to assembly. But now we realize also the dynamic with the shift of global world power, wars and stuff like that, we need to take a neutral stance and bring everything back home into South Africa, create jobs in South Africa, not play politics or get involved in global conflicts that have nothing to do with
us. So it was a strategic decision not to partake in trade wars.
Yes.
Because if it's assembled in China, it'll have that thing that's exactly. in China.
Exactly.
Okay, interesting. Now, patents, if you were to... You said the product is patented, right?
Yes.
How hard is it for one to get a product like this patented?
It's not difficult to start a provisional patent,
okay.
but the search becomes a headache. So how a patent would work is you start with a provisional patent. You create a design and an idea, and you go to CICP, and you register your patent.
Okay.
And then it's on you to then now prove that you are the original founder of this idea. So you need to create a search and go all over the world and see any similar ideas, what percentage are infringing on those ideas for you to create your own new idea. And then you need to go back, redesign, reconfigure until you get 100% to 80%, which is yours. And then from there, you get your patents, your full patents, and then you can do your trademark and your copyright.
And how many countries have you filed these patents in?
We filed it in the US, in China, in India, in the UAE, and in South Africa and the UK.
Damn, that's a lot of countries.
And a lot of money.
Does it cost a lot?
At home, it's really affordable. Abroad, it's really expensive.
And how do you pay it? Is it like an annual thing or is it like a once-off? How does that work?
So it's a once-off when you're starting off. The payments, that's a once-off. And then every 5 years, you need to renew your patent. Mm.
So can we talk about green points a little bit? What
Please.
You meant by that? I know it probably doesn't fall into the category of virtual currencies, but it's also a nice soft spot of mine. I love that space. But I don't know if that's what you mean by it. So
yeah, so it's sort of a virtual currency that we use and our partners use. So it isn't a virtual currency that you could take to other independent facilities, your banks, your crypto wallets, no. So it's basically a tool to encourage people to compete in terms of their health, you know. So you'll set a goal. You'll say, Scott, I want to achieve 10 kilometers. Right, and then you'll publish it, and then the equipment holds you accountable to that 10 kilometers,
okay.
and then once you meet that goal, we reward you with a coin to say, "Listen up, congratulations, here's your coin." And then after accumulation of certain coins, you can then exchange it for a free treadmill. You can exchange it for stuff that are there on the platform that show you the value of coin versus the value of product.
So you're essentially collecting data in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's some comments on that, I'm sure.
Mm.
So that's our biggest selling point. You know, every time we speak about it, we make an example of Tesla.
Yeah.
We say we like a modern day Tesla in regards to everyone sees a car company, but actually it's just a data company. It's collecting billions of data as it moves, as it operates, and that's where the biggest selling point is, the data that they collect. And we think we're there too. Our hardware makes it accessible to market, people using it, but the data is the biggest selling point that we collect.
Interesting. Okay.
Interesting. When you look at the continent, there are a lot of talks around renewable energy, creating solutions, because there's a lot of sun, there's a lot of wind. Is the market ripe for this kind of innovations?
Right.
The African continent at large.
It's actually perfect, and that's who we actually formed the innovation for. When we look at technologies like wind, solar, they're very, very essential to net zero and nuclear. But they're not always practical in dense areas, in areas where there aren't enough people for you to embed a solar panel, a large-scale solar farm or wind farm. So in an African culture from the dawn of time, people have been mobile, whether walking to get water, whether walking to get wood and stuff like that. We've always been mobile and always enjoyed moving. But we've always lost that energy from the dawn of time.
Mm.
And when we did the first estimate, it was around 130 gigawatts of power.
Wow.
And that was from 2000 till date.
Wow.
From just the mobility in Africa alone. So this allows us to then take that lever, and in the fact that Africa is still developing, where you look at 70% of African population is youth. Mm. So we're still going to build roads, we're still going to build gyms, we're still going to build all those facilities. But why should we then build brick-and-mortar facilities that exist instead of innovating our own facilities where a new embedded road can actually generate energy and not for us to just build a road? You'll drive, you'll see potholes, you'll see streetlights are not working, robots. Those things increase to crime.
Right.
If the road had the ability to collect data and generate energy, it solves so many government problems, because governments can see then which roads are most productive or most used, and those are the ones that need the most investment. When a pothole is getting formed, the sensors that are embedded then pick it up, and at a small scale, it informs then the authorities that, listen up, we're at risk of picking up a pothole. Yeah. Let's service it before we get there. If you look at traffic cameras, we had a period last year, I think for the past 2 years, where they say traffic cameras are not working and it needs to go back to Germany to be fixed. Those are ridiculous problems.
Yeah.
That's a form of government to earn revenue. So our devices allow that, to capture that speed as the vehicle moves, for it to send real-time data to then the traffic authorities, and they don't need a specific camera to, a person sitting with a camera to then give you a ticket, but in real-time they collect it. They tried it with the e-tolls and they failed.
Right.
And we also had a conversation with them that also things like the road device when you're generating energy. In the UK, a project that we worked on was a street light. Mm. So we did a dual-purpose street light that works as a street light but also as an EV charger. So if you parked maybe outside Newtown, you can charge your EV vehicle. Mm. The biggest pain point with the EV right now, we don't have the charging facilities. And then there's a company that you look at, Net Zero Carbon, which invested 9 billion rand in EV, but they're looking at the national roads.
Yeah.
So they want to make like a filling station type EV charging point. So we're saying we want to look at the smaller scale where in the roads, governments can earn money through a charger that exists with the street light. But that street light can also capture around the crime and what's going on. So it makes the place safer. It gives us light. So at night, you're not afraid to walk, as well as it gives us an opportunity for governments to earn another form of revenue and to innovate.
This is a complicated solution for my brain to wrap around. And I'm trying to go as low as the minimal amount of installations. Like, for example, I'm trying to get to simplify it to how many kilowatts does one generate per 1,000 steps?
Okay, so per step is 3 joules of energy.
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to get it simpler, but I might just complicate it for you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. But it's easy to calculate from home. It's very easy. You can just Google the kinetic energy formula,
sure,
which will be velocity.
This man is taking me back to school.
It's grade 9 stuff.
That was 20 years ago.
You just revealed your age. Yeah, but looking at it in terms of 1,000, so how we'd work it out is the pace that the people are walking at needs to matter.
Is that how much?
We look at 1,000 people, so a step is 3 joules of electricity, right?
So, yes. So, it'll be 3 times 1,000.
Yes. And depends.
It's 3,000, man.
Joules of energy, which would amount to 3 kilowatts of power.
I was trying to convert that to kilowatts of power.
Yeah.
So, it's 3 kilowatts of power?
Yeah.
Ah. Okay. Okay. So, again.
Go for it. Yeah.
Pardon me. With 3 kilowatts of power.
Yes.
What can I do?
I'm not sure what, for example, what the studio uses, but you could power up the lights, the TV, and we could actually power up the studio for a day. It should, because of a full-scale house takes like 30 kilowatts of power, and that has geysers, pool pumps, electric gates. So it does enough for the small scale. It's not base load power, but it makes a difference for load shedding, for reduction of power bills.
Oh, so for bigger companies, you could have these tiles at the foyer where people are making a lot of movements, and as people are walking in and out of the building, they're recharging your bank.
Exactly.
And per 1,000 footsteps, you've got 3 kilowatts?
Yes.
So my question would be, why aren't these technologies implemented everywhere?
So when
like in
look
the
at,
mall?
Yes, the barrier to entry into market, when we look at that first, it's very advantageous in terms of peak. So in peak time, you will generate maximum amount of power from the people. But there's also off-peak times where you'll see Monday, it's quiet, Tuesday, it's quiet. So if they take the whole investment in a clean energy solution or a generator, for example. Let's look at a country like South Africa where we aren't as privileged in mouth.
Yeah.
So instead of a small-scale shop buying a generator and buying our technology, they'll realize that the generator is more reliable in the sense of anytime I need it, I can power it up. Mm-hmm. Versus the tile is how many people actually walk in for me to generate the amount of energy that is required to power up the thing. So if I have no traffic, that means I have no light.
Mm.
That's a problem. Versus the generator, if you need lights, you just power it up. So what we're trying to do is come up with other innovation ways to create traction, like you said, in a big corporate or company,
right,
is have open gyms where we say people are allowed to come and exercise for free.
Mm.
But the catch is we're going to harness that energy to power up the facility.
Mm.
So instead of paying a monthly gym membership, you can maybe walk into the building and you'll find a fitness center that's free of charge for the community. It allows the businesses to interact with the community, but the businesses benefit in terms of energy as well as having a vital community in terms of vitality. And
pardon me, another silly one. How much time do I need to spend on a treadmill to produce 10 kilowatts?
Oh, that's going to spend a lot of time.
2 hours?
How fit are you? That's the first question.
Oh, okay. Dang.
So what would you...
I mean, I did 1,000 steps and I got 3 kilowatts. That's pretty easy stuff, right?
Yeah. But you see, you didn't do the 1,000 steps in one place. You walked around, you went to the bathroom. So there's places where you won't step on the tile. That those tiles won't exist. And it isn't feasible to replace all tiles with the smart tile. It's
right,
just
right,
in
right.
the entry points where there's high traffic. Yes.
No, but if I can skip, I can do a hub. I can do 500 skips in like 5 minutes.
Yes.
So 1,000 walks is like...
Yeah, so there you'd benefit.
I'm trying to think... Okay, instead of having a solar at home, I buy a treadmill,
mm-hmm.
and every morning and every evening before I go to bed, I get myself 5 kilowatts.
Yes, it would be good to take certain, again, to take certain things off the grid.
Yeah.
Yeah, because remember, your fridge needs to run 24 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your pool pump maybe is running 8 hours a day. Your geyser's running 8 to 16 hours a day. So when you aren't exercising, those things won't be able to run. But your TV is like that. If you want to, before you watch TV, say... I'll set a target for myself. I need to exercise 30 minutes in order to watch 30 minutes worth of TV. You get on your treadmill, you exercise, you generate power, and then you can power up your TV. But I wouldn't advise it in terms of trying to take your whole house off a base load measure of electricity to kinetic energy.
Scott, in a small apartment, you wouldn't?
It's possible. So before we go down the mathematical rabbit hole here, I mean, I get it. Actually, there are good questions because it gives you a practical scope as to, okay, what can we do
in
the household? I get it. But, you know, I want to bring back a little bit to yourself in the sense of, like, at what point did you decide, you know, I mean, you're quite young already when you're building things in school, that you're going to be a climate warrior, you know, like a tech warrior. Because I'll give you from my perspective. So I'm a little bit of an optimist. Like, mm-hmm. I also kind of assume... Many times wrongly so, but I often assume that people are generally good, that the world doesn't work.
Why are you looking at me when you said people are generally good?
I'm not naive enough to think the world actually works like that. I know.
Yeah.
So, like, but the issue is we have the technology today in order to run a very clean society for the most part.
Mm.
And there's lots of reasons why that isn't the case, and I would suggest that the reason that is the case because of people, and you know the companies that are in existence, and they have their vested interest in keeping things the way they are. I get that.
Yeah.
And I understand that you do want to preserve your income, but I mean there is a tipping point where the good for the planet tips becomes more. It's better for you than the profit.
Yes.
You know, even though we're talking about a free technology, I mean, we could have had electric cars free, quote-unquote, long ago. We didn't have to go the oil route for cars. We could have gone another route. So at what point, if I'm looking now at the ideal society moving forward, I would like to see clean energy. I would like to see a much cleaner world, and it's possible to do it now. So my question to you is, these technologies, I mean, you've proven they work. They're in the market. But leaning back into my question earlier in the sense of why haven't they been implemented everywhere? And it's not just a question for your specific technologies. I'm talking more general social...
In renewable energies.
You know, why Where's your thinking in the space? Are you optimistic like that for your company, or is it more like, well, you're going to carve out the space you can with those who care, but the planet itself is probably not going to take it up?
So a point that isn't really spoken about in terms of renewable energy and why we aren't there yet is we have a lot of generation capacity, a lot of clean technology that can generate the power. But where we lack is transmission and storage. So the current grids aren't designed to store the renewable energy or transmit it. So we need to then get an investment in transmission and storage. And that would be, and this is at large scale, governments, private sectors, individuals, where the problem isn't creating the energy, but the problem is where can we keep it for a later use? And we shouldn't lose it, you know? So that's the biggest pay point. Even if you look at your Teslas and your electric vehicles, they struggle with their battery capacity, there's explosion, stuff like that. We need to, and that's the responsibility lies on us as innovators. We need to come up with a safe, practical, affordable storage system. Most importantly, before transmission, storage system.
Are you exploring battery technology at all? Or?
We are looking at battery technology. We looked at it, but and then when you look at your lithium, for you to get lithium for R&D is very, very expensive right now. So that's the biggest pay point.
What are we currently using for storage?
We're using batteries. We're using batteries, also power banks. But again, the lifespan isn't ideal versus the equipment. For and this is on our side, where our frames are lifetime in terms of our gym equipment. And then we tell you, you can have around 20 years with our motors. But then our batteries, our storage capacity is at 4 years, you see. So in that 20 years, you need to at least go 5 times to replace your battery. So that's the people's biggest, and they're very expensive. So that's the biggest pay point.
Generally, like, I'm not suggesting, you know, cut off legacy tech and we just do renewable. I'm suggesting that there's going to be a combination, to your point, in terms of storage. But, I mean, I would like to see a percentage
increase.
And I think we're in a space where we could actually increase that quite a lot.
Definitely.
So I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of
how much of the batteries and the motors and the stuff that's used to build these things, how much of it is renewable?
Oh, that's another good question. And very little of it is renewable. That's the problem also. So
we're solving renewable with non-renewable.
With non-renewable options. We're not 3D printing components. We're using metal factories. So we harm the environment trying to fix
the environment.
Exactly. Also mining of the lithium. If you just go on any social media platform and look at the DRC, how it is, the conditions there. Those are horrible conditions for human beings to be in. And for the whole aim of getting the lithium to make the world a better place.
Cobalt.
Yes. Yeah. But these children are dying. They're mining with their bare hands.
Oof.
That shouldn't be a mining condition for anybody. And these are the things that are happening now. Because also, again, we as the innovators, we want to pay a low price to get the minerals.
Yeah.
We want to pay them a fraction of what they're supposed to get for their minerals in order for us to have a larger R&D scope and for us to go for an R&D. So we don't want to take the risk of paying the fair price for the lithium.
Do we have a solution there?
We need to, like you said, we need to honestly be honest people. Sometimes it just goes down to you as an individual of being honest, a fair value, giving each person.
So we can save this planet?
We can. I'm very optimistic, like he says. I'm very optimistic we can. And I'll make an analogy, right?
Right.
If, let's say, you get a hunter, right?
Yeah.
And you want his deer fur, the fur for his deer. And then in exchange, you give him the Mona Lisa painting.
Hey.
It's worth a lot of money, but to him it means nothing because it won't help him get more for tomorrow. But instead, if you give him a gun to enable to hunt for more fur, it helps uplift him. And the same thing it happens in terms of, and that same analogy, I think we should apply it in terms of the extraction of the raw materials for us to create a better future.
Okay.
Let's pay fair value in terms of offering equipment that's green and that's safe and training them to mine the stuff in a proper way versus us giving them a fish to eat today and not teaching them how to fish. Because with the equipment, they have a larger scale of market and they can scale up. mm-hmm. versus with their hand. At certain points, you can no longer mine with your hand. You get to a standpoint. And once you're at that standpoint, what happens then?
That's a tall order, though. I mean, capitalism doesn't care.
Well, yeah, but market is a tough one. So you have to, I mean, talking about economic theory here, even in my sense, in terms of talking about a cleaner future, I mean, technology, right. clean technology, it's not technically clean if you go back far enough. It's, yeah. You get to the mining problems. You get to
the shipping, airplanes, trucks, bringing it to you.
But, it's a problem.
So the point is, when you're just thinking about the end point of that technology and what it does and how it works, what it puts back into the atmosphere, you can get that quite clean. We have the technology to do that today, but the supply line to get to that particular
product, the value chain is rotten.
The supply line,
the product is clean.
It's clean, exactly.
So the product is rotten.
Yeah, and I hope I don't offend anyone. Like with vegans, for example, right?
Yeah.
Especially. And I have a conversation with them when I travel abroad. The products that they're eating come from Africa, America. And for you to get proper avos, you need to kill insects, pests that live and breathe and survive on that. And then you need to get trucks and planes to ship it to the countries for the vegans to then have.
You guys are painting a very scary picture here. So we can't save the planet without killing it.
We can if we intend to do better, if we're willing to reduce the amount of profit we take home.
There's a movement. It's not a movement. It's just an economic idea in terms of the true cost of things, like your true cost of your phone.
Right.
I mean, my Samsung is far more honest than your phone. But
it is. That's why I'm also on Samsung. Far more honest.
But, the true cost of things, you can apply it to anything. You can.
Guys, this is a 3K phone. What the hell are you talking about? You guys are using fancy phones.
But also the true cost of, like, even a burger, for example.
The true
cost of what you pay for is not actually the true cost of it. It's far, far more expensive.
Of course.
But, I mean, that's the same theory we're talking about. Yeah. And the solution to that is, I don't know, unknown. But anyway, this is what we want to talk about today.
And also another thing that would help is putting anti-lobbying laws in place. Because government's main purpose is to protection of its people.
Mm.
But once we start lobbying for government to overlook protection of the people, it's a profit business.
Mm.
So they need to be held responsible to create the laws that if you want to produce a renewable energy product, at least 60% of the product should be renewable. Use recycled materials, use stuff that it'll slow down the production, but it will help us find a more sustainable solution going forward than trying to produce at mass from the get-go, and we cut a lot of corners.
Is regulation in this country helping at all? Is the development in that sector to create regulation so that products like this are supported from tax to distributions to value chain? Is there any development there?
There's a lot of talk. I'm actually gaining weight from sitting down at seminars at very nice hotels where they pay your food and we just talk.
Yeah, it's like
action.
When you're dealing with policy, you're talking about a very long, long road. Normally it takes some sort of crisis event of some sort for the policy to really shift.
Yeah, but we've been here for a long time. I would imagine it started a long time ago.
We were talking about this before you arrived. Think about it now. So Trump has been inaugurated. So in one sense, it's really good for business. A lot of people make a lot of money.
The next 4 years at least.
But it's not going to do any favors for
the environment,
the miners in the DRC.
Yes.
For example.
Yes.
So it's like there's pros and cons to every moment, I guess.
Do it. And elaborating on what he said about Trump, for example. He already signed an executive order to leave the Paris Climate Peace Accord.
Oof.
So with America, like them being one of the pioneers of first any type world. Of industry, it takes us 4 years backwards. For the next 4 years, there is no conversation about climate. We'll talk about fracking, we'll talk about oil, we'll talk about, we'll go backwards, and then the next leader comes in for 4 years, and then maybe he's pro-climate.
Yeah.
And then we'll take 4 years to try and make two steps when we took 8 steps backwards.
Is this subjected to his age? Is he that old that he doesn't care?
I don't think he's ever cared. But look, it's not about Trump or Republican or Democrat.
Yeah.
It's just generally like leadership roles when you've got stakeholders in your leadership.
Yeah.
And it's not even about whether it's America or any other, or Northern Europe. Any sort of country has its players and its lobbyists and have their vested interests. It's not like, oh, it's just because America is one of the most powerful countries in the world. They regulate policy around the world, whether it's their government or not. They have leaning they can lean on anyone. I didn't want to get into policy discussion because policy is where, for me, it goes down the rabbit hole.
My point around that was just, can this product survive without proper regulation in place? Can we get movement? Can we see this product being used in the everyday, in our everyday life, without proper regulation?
And also, again, going back to the optimistic scale, is there is something, you know, as much as we say the renewable energies, if you look at the full cost, like he elaborated, well, there is drawdown to it, but there's also positive to it, you know. It reduces a certain amount of emission that's going to the world, you know.
Of course.
And other countries are then also, less developed countries are also taking that stance of, let's try and integrate some certain percentage of renewable energy within. If you look back to a few years ago, it was all harmful admissions to the environment. So there is that optimistic stance that there are people talking about it, there are people doing stuff about it, and it's not a switch that turn it on and off and happens overnight. So there's also a lot of optimistic things you could look into
that
promise you a better future.
Okay.
It's like if you're a country and you make clean energy policies, your neighboring country will be like, oh, look, they've made those policies. Oh, but you can come mine at our place, because then they'll get more money. It's all that kind of, it's like America. They say their emissions have dropped. Why have their emissions dropped? Well, because they've outsourced a lot of
to other countries.
China. So China's got
They're killing
problems.
China.
China's got huge problems now in terms of their industry, which America used to have, but now they've outsourced it. But now they say, oh, but we're still doing the same thing. We're dropping emissions. No, that's actually not what's happened. Anyway.
All right. On the side of tech.
The dirty world.
Yeah, this dirty world is a problem. What technologies are you using in these products? If I am an innovator and I want to get into this space, what do I need to know? Of course, I need to know electronics. I need to be able to source components from China and so on and so forth. But in terms of IoT and other technologies, maybe AI, what other technologies can I integrate into these products, and what skills do I need to learn for me to be able to create sustainable products here?
I think by the fact that you asked that question, you already have a big step into the door.
Okay.
With tools like your ChatGPT, your OpenAI, they allow you to ask them the right questions to guide you to doing the right stuff, you know. I'm not saying go there naively and say you're going to start building. But firstly, ask the right questions.
Okay.
How do I do something? You're going to fail. I'm not saying you're going to succeed. But when you fail, you learn something you did not know before.
Right.
So there isn't a certain criteria or skill or know-how that you need to have pre-entering.
Okay.
The only thing I'll say is have the ability to ask the right questions and you'll find the right answers.
Okay.
Can I ask you a lighter question? Like, how's your day-to-day? Like, you've done lots of work, you've done lots of startups. Like, what's your day-to-day process? How do you keep pushing? You've got this ecosystem around you that works. Sometimes you fail, sometimes you don't.
Yes.
You know, what's your day-to-day?
My day-to-day is actually very relaxed. Because I'd say...
one of those tough problems, you have relaxed
today. I really enjoy that. Mm. So I have three friends, right? And they're also my co-founders. So my social circle is very, very small.
Okay.
My business circle is quite open. And then day to day, you try and impart discipline. If I set out a task that I need to do, I need to hold myself accountable to do those things. And then after that, you can sleep, you can relax, you can read a book, can play chess, there's paddle I do. So I'm very active as well. I'm very active. I play some soccer. So all those things give me a while fit life.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I have no girlfriend, so I guess I have more time there.
What?
Yeah, I have no girlfriend.
By choice.
Oh. By choice.
Can I ask you about funding a little bit?
Yes,
please. You know, when I was searching a little bit about you before this session, I came across, you must have been in the UAE at the time, and you mentioned that you, in that particular TikTok, it wasn't your account, it was someone else's account, but they're interviewing you.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you had secured $10 million in funding.
Yes.
That was just last year, I think.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
So funding is much, and this is for the entrepreneurs and innovators are listening. Funding is much easier to procure when you're outside the country versus inside the country.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of propaganda and misinformation that happens around anywhere in the world, you know, unless you go there and see it firsthand.
Yeah.
So when you go there, you meet like people and they really want to help. They really want to help Africa improve. And there's also people every day, working people who have savings, and they realize that a bank isn't always my best option. They'll put certain money in the bank, but let me try and invest family funds. Let me try and invest in the business and see how it goes, you know. So it makes that much more easier. And the fact that the rand is weaker to foreign currency makes it much, much better.
Oh, $10 million is a lot of rands.
It is a lot of rands.
How did you raise that?
Until you start spending them.
Especially it's for building factory. Something this expensive. How did you raise it?
We use safes. A safe note.
Okay.
So it's basically it's us giving you equity at a later stage.
Mm.
Yeah. So that
was it. One investor or was it?
No, it was a group of five investors.
Okay.
At $2 million apiece.
Okay.
Right. I think it was at a valuation of $25 million. So what happens then is when you raise it, we're raising for a factory, not for me. So people mustn't listen, mustn't chase me down and think I have money, I'm broke.
Yes, $10 million.
When you convert it then into rands, you'll see it's like 300 and something million rand.
Right, right.
And then when you look at the reality of building a factory from get-go, like for a proper supply chain, it's like 400 million rand. So then you see you're still short to the end goal. To watch, and you still need to set up logistics, you need environment assessments, so all that whole process.
A lot of money.
It takes all that money away.
Yeah, I probably agree with you that stepping out of the country, your access to funds is far more viable.
But you still have to spend to get that money.
No, sure, but it's just like, I always think about this. I was born in Canada, right? But I've been here most of my life.
I told you, he's Drake's uncle.
But I've been here since I was a teen. But your economies are so different. Like, to get a $2 million, you know, an individual investor, $2 million, for a lot of people in that side of the world, that's actually not a lot of money.
At all.
Is it?
At all.
And I remember, many years ago, I used to work at Arena Holdings, the Sunday Times Group, and they got bought out. And I think they're bought out for about R1 billion. And I was like, still, that translates to, about $50 million at that time, you know, 20-to-1 kind of breakdown. And $50 million is also, for a whole media company, is peanuts for... And you look at places that are getting bought for $3-4 billion, and you're like, that's like South Africa's GDP. And that's
exactly.
and that's just the economies of scale. And we're looking at small media startups like this. I listened to a couple shows... They're small media startups, but they're still getting $2-3 million investment in North America, and they're doing not much more than what we're doing for the most part.
So
it's very different.
Are you saying if we go that side, we'll raise more money?
It's very different economies.
Very different. So I'll take an example, right, and look at home. What he's saying, there's TIA, the Technology Innovation Agency, right, and they give ticket sizes of around 250,000 rand to R1 million for grassroots innovation. When you convert it, that's not even $100,000.
Yeah.
But if you go to the UK, grassroots level, they start ticket size at 250,000 euros to 500,000 euros.
That's grassroots.
That's grassroots innovation. You see, that's just idea. I have an idea.
Pounds.
Exactly. I have an idea and I want to make it something. If you look at your OpenAIs, they add, I think, $40 billion now, if not more, and they still at R&D.
Yeah.
So to build, also another thing people need to consider, to build a company that side costs more money than it does to build this side.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and also the consumer, the customer level, that side is different from this side.
So, what are we getting wrong in this country? Why are we not doing good in terms of funding? Is it the VCs? Is it the governments? What are we getting wrong?
We lack knowledge a lot. I think the biggest
aspect... As the entrepreneurs or as the investors?
As entrepreneurs as well.
Okay.
Investors, and I hope I don't make enemies with investors, but the investors' goal is to make money.
Right, right.
They don't care. You pink, you brown, you look like a dog, you look like a horse.
If you can you make
me
money?
Be in business.
Right, right.
You understand me?
But are you saying they are not good products for them to invest in?
We don't know the people to ask. So I'll have a good idea and I'll come to Thabo and Thabang. I know Thabo and Thabang have money for a quarter, but I have a world great idea, you know? instead of me saying to Taban Tabang, don't invest in my business, can I have a one, help me raise money for a one-way ticket to the UK? Mm. Not to live there or return ticket, but to go there and learn how they build their businesses first, but also try and raise traction. You know, even if it's not an investment, but if you come back home and say, listen up, I was in the UK and they like the idea, the home guys are more likely, more receptive to you because they understand that you've done an international market versus who have you spoken to? I've spoken to the guys in my hood. Mm. Are they, and you want to sell some, to someone in Sandton, for example, you understand? Yeah. So those are not your market. They're not your investors. They're people you spoke to. Your actual market, you don't know. You've never spoken to your actual market, you know.
But products that are failing are not only those that are in disadvantaged communities. Yes. Products in the inner in the cities and in much leafy areas are also struggling. People who have access to TIA, to SPY, and all of those government organizations, people who have raised amounts of 4 million are still struggling to break through to the market. And I'm trying to see what are we getting wrong. I mean, you've traveled across the world. You've seen how governments and other VCs that side do things. What's the major difference?
I've got an example.
Yes.
I still do, but I used to do a little bit more work in the indie game development scene. The guys making games here, right? So we've got a lot of skill here. We've got lots of talent. Guys doing really good ideas. We've talked about it a few times. And there's been a few successes here that do make a lot of money. But recently, just in early December, I was down in Cape Town for the Africa Games Week, and we were talking. Mm. They were talking about, you know, why are there no AAA studios in South Africa, even though we probably have the scale of talent, we've got the ideas. And look, there are examples of some AA studios. And the question would always be, why don't the AAA studios that are spending hundreds of millions of dollars developing games, they could develop the same game here for a fraction of that cost?
True.
And to your question that you're asking is like, because if an international comes here, they want to invest here, they just get nailed by regulation, government, and government red tape.
Yes.
And that's one of the biggest problems. And it's a number of different industries. So you've got even a media entertainment industry, it comes out. Mm. It's in that. And Mark Harris, the CEO of Tsimokolong Precinct, also mentioned it.
Yeah.
In terms of attracting funding for the precinct.
Right.
You've got the same sort of regulation red tape. And that comes down to our earlier discussion with, here's policy. When you start dealing with people and their policy and government forces, it's almost becomes a
rabbit hole.
And also not just that, also internal startup governance.
Okay.
You'll see a lot of cases where businesses, like you said, they raise, they go, but we lack ethics.
Oh.
As founders, there's a lot of founders amongst us who lack simple ethics. I'll come to you guys, I'll say I need to fundraise 10 million.
Mm.
Tomorrow you'll see me with a G-Wagon.
Oof.
Does it make sense?
You know? Scott. I know you turn up on a G-Wagon. I tell you that much.
So we also lack ethics. And that's a big pain point. And also investors speak like that. They do know, they read, and they've also been burnt before by lack of ethics within the African scale. Mm. We lack ethics. And we need to improve on our ethics. Ethics will be our biggest downfall. Governance and personal level. We're too welcoming and too comfortable with bad ethic practice in business.
Damn,
that's actually a hard point. I don't think we can go down the rabbit hole on that one. But
it's a hard point. Damn. Yeah, no, that's a hammer right there. Mm. So, are you saying for funding in the space that you are in, it's better to look for international than local? If you were to advise somebody get into the space,
yeah, in big tech,
yeah,
look internationally. And then local,
right?
Until we locally can change our mindset.
Okay.
Because there is money in South Africa again. I'll make an example. Last year we spent 1.1 trillion on gambling.
What? Wait, what?
1.1 trillion was spent on gambling.
In
this country.
It was funny. A friend of mine walked into the airport.
We have that kind of money?
We have a lot of money.
So a friend of mine walked into, she posted it on her Facebook, whatever, on the stories, and she walked into the airport and there's Hollywood Bets ads all over the place, and she just said, Hollywood Bets must be stopped, and she's taking a video of all the ads. But that just goes to your point. Like, the economy behind betting is huge.
It's huge. And then between the 25th and the 31st of December, we spend, I think, around 1.7 billion on alcohol alone.
Hell no.
Serious.
We've got that much alcohol in the country?
We have a lot of money in the country.
So I've got a flat just here in town, and I was moving out of my flat just last week, and I got to a couple guys on the street that sell bags outside the shop, riding checkers, and said, just help me move a little bit. So I gave him a couple $100, and I was chatting to them, and they said, and he pulled out a slip. I said, oh, what's that for? He was lamenting the fact that he lost money on betting. And I said, how much do you make in a day? Because just enough for some food and maybe some soap to clean up and stuff. But he still had money to bet. And I was like, I get it. But it's at the same time, it's like, okay, but maybe it's not the wise choice. But it's to your point, though, that your priorities in terms of what you spend in South Africa, it's betting.
It's alcohol, you know.
I mean...
Guys, this is my country. I love it, but
I love it too.
But there's money here.
There's a lot of money. The township economy has a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be moved in South Africa. We're just moving it in the wrong spaces. There's a lot of money in South Africa.
Okay. All right. I think. I think we're a little bit over time,
Just in closing, do you have any sort of advice, anyone looking to set up, what would you say would be your parting thoughts?
My parting thoughts would be, I'd give people advice, right, to build successful. Try the market before you build a product, you know.
How do you try the market?
Even if it's just a prototype.
Okay, cool.
See, are they actually willing buyers for what you're producing? Many of us spend so much time trying to build a product no one is interested in. And also it goes back to then, I hope also in this people who are listening, part of is the governance people that don't look for high tech. As much as we like high tech and it sounds great for conversations.
Right.
People don't care. Customers don't care. I need you to solve my problem. I solve my problem, yes. If it's high tech that solves my problem, great. If it's something simple that solves my problem, great. Solve a problem. We're so busy trying to be the smartest and the most technical people you'll ever see. But... we're not solving no one's real life problem. So solve a problem and then the money will follow.
Cool.
And don't think you need to have a perfect product to enter the market. The market will fix your product, you know. They will criticize you. They'll tell you what to do better about it. Get in as quick as possible. So even if you get burnt, but you learn. Versus spending 5 years alone in isolation, building a product. And by the time you come out, the market has moved past your solution, you know. So that's the biggest problem that we need to look at.
Damn. All right. So you must research the market thoroughly and make sure you are solving for a particular market and know that the market is willing to
pay. Exactly. And don't research it in theory.
Yeah,
practical.
Yeah. Be there.
Be on the ground. And also what we don't like to do, and sorry if it doesn't sound like a race thing, but the white founder that I've had, they always put their skin in the game. Even if it's a mere 10,000 Rand, even if it's a 20,000 Rand, when investors come, you as a founder, what have you put in yourself to show that you, even if it's your last 100 Rand, show the investor that I only had 100 Rand in my account, now I'm broke, but this last 100 Rand, the way I believe in my business, I'm going to put the 100 Rand in my business.
Yeah.
We'd rather be seen in Diamond Walk buying nice clothes,
please.
But I've never invested 1 Rand in my business, but I expect you guys to come and put your hard-earned money in my business. Put your own money in your game, and then it will come out.
You heard it from Duamato. You must fund your own dream. Nobody's going to fund your dream. Anyhow, just the last one from me, and I think we'll shut it down.
Yes.
You said you managed to raise 10 million for the factory. You have spoken to governments, to private. The market, you think, is ready for your product. Where are you exactly? What's the last mile?
We on the final certifications with SABS, just doing the last weeks on the 1st of April. We should be online in all macro and game stores selling. And then from there on, we should be doing Alibaba, Amazon for the B2C market. And then on the B2B market, we've already been operating.
Okay.
We're doing final pilot products for us to then go to national level and allow the consumers to then use our products on the roads and in their water systems.
Cool. So B2B, how do they get access? How do they get hold of you and how do they...
So our website is www.iandtech.co.za. Contact details info@iandtech.co.za.
Cool.
We're on LinkedIn as well. We're on Instagram as well. And we're always open to talk. We have quite a number of trade shows happening. In Feb, we're doing Kenya and Ethiopia. We return back home. We do Cape Town. We'll do the mining in Durban. We will do the African Energy Show. We will do JTEX Africa, JTEX Global. So, yeah, we will be around.
BTC, when can we expect the product?
First of April.
This year?
Yes.
Damn. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll leave the details in the description box below, and you can get hold of Ndwamato and Intech if you need any services from them.
Thanks for coming in, man. Good chat.
No, thank you guys for having me. And it was actually my first podcast.
Is it?
Yeah. I usually refuse any type of conversation like this.
Yeah.
But after I saw what you guys have done,
yeah,
I felt like I'd be doing myself a disservice by not coming.
You are doing so. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Angle Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please do like, subscribe, share, follow us on all our social media.